Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. What do duck decoys, quilts, and oil paintings have in common? They and many other examples of folk art are part of a major exhibit of American art on display at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Uncommon Folk features the range of things you might or might not normally think of as art. The museum most certainly does think of it as art. It began collecting this stuff many, many years ago and has amassed quite a collection, including art from a number of Wisconsin artists. Margaret Andera is the curator of the exhibit, which is open through May 4th. She tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North what makes art informed by self-taught and folk traditions different from that of classically trained artists.
When you go to a museum, most people expect to see work by artists who were trained in academic traditions, painting, sculpture, textiles, drawing. Most of those artists, especially contemporary or modern artists, have gone through art school. But there is a tradition, not just in this country, but everywhere, of artists who are either trained in different traditions that is not through art school, but through almost like community training. It's part of their life wherever they live, wherever they happen to live. It may be based on their religion. It may be based on their geography. And then there are artists who have no training, who come to the creative process and make extraordinary things. And so those latter two groups, the folk and the self-taught artists, are artists that the Milwaukee Art Museum has been dedicated to collecting since 1951. And that's unusual for a general art museum that also collects the work of trained artists, academically trained artists.
Why the interest in those groups of artists? What do they bring to the table that an artist in that more traditional training scenario doesn't?
It's interesting because at first, when this genre first sort of hit museums, it was about what made it different. But the fact that so many of these artists have been brought to the museum's attention through trained artists, I think the question really is, how are they so similar? How do artists who maybe weren't academically trained arrive at similar aesthetic details and ideas? I mean, yes, you can tell that perhaps an untrained artist isn't painting with perspective, with proper perspective. But that is a bad thing if what you want is to look at something painted with perfect perspective. But perhaps when it's not painted with perfect perspective, it allows you to see other things and it allows you to look at something in a different way. So I think the history of this material really being these artists being discovered by trained artists, the trained artists who look at this material, I think they see a freedom in some of the work, especially in the self-taught artists' work, because these are artists who were, you know, not only operating outside of the mainstream art world, but they weren't necessarily aware of the mainstream art world. And then within folk and self-taught, I mean, the way that I – and this is such a – this is a minefield. The language around this field is really difficult, and people disagree on what labels. But in my mind, the difference between a folk artist and a self-taught artist is that self-taught I take very literally. These are artists who had never been taught how to paint, sculpt, do whatever. Folk artists, I think, are artists who are working within some sort of a tradition, whether it's a carving tradition or there are drawing traditions that started on the East Coast, the Fraktur drawings that came from German immigrants, quilting traditions, the G's Bend quilters in Alabama. They are folk artists. They are 21st century folk artists, but they are artists who are trained in a certain way of art making that isn't taught through art school. It's taught in their own communities.
So when you put those two things together in an exhibition like this one, how do they illuminate each other?
I think it's interesting because I think in some ways you don't see a difference. And I think ultimately that's kind of what I see in this field because I also work with contemporary art. And to me, I'm starting to see less and less of the differences and more of the similarities. And so, you know, this exhibition is our way of, first of all, showing off. I mean, I'll be blunt. It's a way of us to show off this amazing collection that we have. And the exhibition features the American folk and self-taught artists in our collection. And so when you look at them together, I don't know that you could necessarily say who might be self-taught, who was working within a tradition, except to say that perhaps, you know, a quilt is a traditional form of folk art. But when you look at portraiture, I think there's a fine line. I think in some ways it's not necessarily clear.
When you put this exhibition together, we have to say it's huge.
There
are a lot of pieces and moving parts, literally and figuratively, in this exhibition. How did you select? Obviously, you made the selection to make it American.
Right.
But from there, how did you put it together?
Well, what I really wanted to do is to highlight the strengths of our collection, and we have a lot of strengths in the collection, and I thought it was going to be easy. I've worked with this collection for a very long time, and so I know the collection really well, and I thought I was going to – the selection was going to sort of unfold in front of me because it was going to be clear. I didn't realize how deep this collection went. And so I had to make decisions about things that told a story that was kind of interesting, yet also where we could show the collection and show examples of certain things in depth. And so I had to cut things out, like weather vanes, for instance, and face jugs. And so the way that I made selections was really where we had great depth, like portraiture. We have an amazing collection of 19th and 20th century and into the 21st century folk and self-taught portraiture. And so I chose things that lived together happily and that even across a century could have a conversation one with another. And again, what you see, the way the exhibition is laid out, is really how things, yes, materials have changed over the century, but there are so many similarities between 19th and 20th century portraiture. Again, with these artists who weren't necessarily working within the guidelines of what a portrait is supposed to look like, but they arrive at a similar aesthetic ending, and that's the part that interests me the most.
Yeah, they come to the same place eventually.
They do.
It's just an interesting, circuitous way.
They come from such different – they travel such different roads to get there.
So you have portraiture as one example. Another one, and I know this has gotten some publicity because it's just so perfect for Wisconsin, the duck decoys.
Yes.
You know, we think about duck decoys as something very practical, not really an art object, but yet they are.
Well, they are. And we wanted to take care in this installation to be able to show these objects off in their best light. A lot of these things have been on view in the galleries, in the permanent collection galleries, for a while, but we wanted to show them in a way that either put them with more objects that are like them to kind of contextualize them a little bit more, or show them at a different vantage point. And when you mentioned the duck decoys, the decoys are all installed on these shelves against a wall, and there's a particular pair of these decoys that are flat. They're flat-backed birds. That's actually part of their actual names. And as sculptures, they're absolutely stunning shapes. And so I put them on lower shelves because even somebody short like me can get the proper vantage point of looking down on them, like sort of looking on top and looking down on them. So yes, they were functional objects, but they were collected by collectors who were looking at these things as sculptural forms. And that's what happens throughout this exhibition with functional objects like duck decoys, or there are trade signs, you know, advertising signs that were meant to convey the purpose of a store or a shop, but that are done with such artistic intention and flair that you can't ignore the fact that there are artistic aesthetic decisions being made in these things and that go beyond just the simple function of the object.
What I find interesting is that you look at some of this in the exhibition and you think, well, that's kind of one step removed from collectibles, and that people collect not necessarily thinking of them as art,
right,
but as, you know, just something fun to have. Oh, I've got a collection of signs. I know a lot of people who collect things like that. Right. And for you, what elevates something from a collectible to something that has that artistic intent?
I think the end product, it is something that, you know, when you look at art, there are paintings by trained academic painters who I think are museum worthy, and that same painter has painted things that aren't. that doesn't mean they necessarily don't end up in a museum anyway. But so I think what this material does in a lot of ways is it broadens the definition. It's just like you said, you know, you may not have thought of these things as art. But if they have a form or a shape that is interesting and has artistic intent that pushes boundaries the same way that a sculpture would, that somehow there are, you know, there's a sculpture that I'm thinking of particularly in the exhibition that is an illustration of the Bible, essentially. And the way that that sculptor, that carver, has told a story in such simple, simple forms, it's brilliance with its economy. It's a brilliantly economic sculpture that I think so many artists are after, that kind of how can I get my message across without having to do too much? And that's a skill. And there are artists who in this exhibition who do that really well. So something from, you know, is it a collectible? One could argue that prints are a collectible because they're made in editions. So I think what this material does, and it's why sometimes, you know, people are uncomfortable with it. A lot of general museums weren't collecting this art in the very beginning when this first came on the scene, because it does push the definition of art. But as the world gets so much smaller and influences are coming from everywhere, I think we have to be open to broadening the definition.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you your favorite piece in this.
The work that I was just talking about, the Edgar Tolson Fall of Man sculpture. And for the reasons that I just said, when I give tours through the exhibition, I say, if aliens landed on Earth today and said, tell me what is sculpture, show me an example of sculpture, you could take, it's a series of eight works in this Fall of Man series. And the last work is where it's called Cain Going Out into the World. And the sculpture, it's a small square sculpture that has the slain Abel, and Eve is bent over grieving her dead son. And Cain is on the opposite part of this square, and his back is to his mother and slain brother, and he's about to like go out into the world. It's like the beginning of the rest of the story. And it's three figures carved out of poplar wood. So the wood is untreated except for the clothing on the figures. There's black paint. But the way that the expressions, the way that Cain's body is positioned in the corner of this one block of wood that everything was carved from, it kind of says it all. And it's done in such a simple way. It's not hitting you over the head with it. It's the message is you just sort of come to it. It's an easy sort of arrival as you come to this and you think, oh, I understand this. And yet it leaves you with this question like, and now what's going to happen? And there are all these little subtleties that the artist has done. He's got boots on Cain as he's about to step out of Eden and go. To me, that's my favorite work. And it's a work that people respond to a lot. And a lot of artists that have come through the exhibition, everybody always stops at that one.
It is pretty intense. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful series. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't know that story, you know the story you've seen it.
Exactly. And again, it's not like it's got text explaining it. I mean, we put nothing. I purposely didn't put any explanation of that work. There are the titles of each of the sculptures, but you certainly understand it.
Well, Margaret, it has been such a pleasure, as always, to have you in the studio. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Uncommon Folk Traditions in American Art is on display at the Milwaukee Art Museum through May 4th. Margaret Andera curates the exhibit, and she spoke with Bonnie North. You can see pictures of some of what's on display at wuwm.com/lake effect. A new book by a Milwaukee writer offers a guide to remarkable and timeless fantasy novels for children and adults. We'll hear about some of them when Lake Effect returns on WUWM. ¶¶